There's something I don't understand. Maybe you can help me. I don't understand Florida. I don't get it. For a number of reasons. I would never want to live there. I did live there when I was a young adult for 1 year. And after 1 year, after living in Florida, I wanted to get the hell out of there. Many people move to Florida on purpose. It's not a prison sentence. They go there on purpose. I can see visiting Disney World or Busch Gardens or Cape Canaveral, Kennedy, whatever you call it. I can see that, going to Miami, to the nightclub life. I get that. But to live there and buy a home or have a place and live there, I don't get. And I'll tell you why. But not right now. I need to start the show.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hold on now. Hold on.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Take your seats, please. Will you all please take your seats? Please, please sit down. I want to start. Please sit down, please. Please sit down. Welcome to the program. All right, that's better. That's what I like. That's what I like. Oh, yeah. Thank you. That's not canned at all. That was real applause. I have a studio audience of 10,000 people here in my studio, making it a studio audience. And that was not an audio enhancement at all. I lived in Florida when I was about 20 years old. Probably not even. Actually, I wasn't even 20. I was like 18 or 19 years old. I got an apartment there. And I lived in Coral Gables. Do you know where that is? Hey, I'm talking to you. Do you know where that is? It's about approximately 20 miles south of Miami. First there's Fort Lauderdale, then there's Miami, and then you go further south is Coral Gables. They're all rather close to each other. I had horrible experiences in Florida. First of all, let's start from the beginning. Why would you embrace a state that's shaped like a penis? It is. It is. You look at it, and it's not even an attractive one. It's a droopy one. Why would I want to live down near the tip? It just doesn't make any sense. My apartment was basically on the foreskin of the state. It was a horrible experience. There was a girl that I was in love with at the age of about 18. And maybe I was 19. I have no idea. I have no recollection of anything at all. I don't even know how I got here today. Yeah, she was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed beauty. And I'm not superficial, but it certainly didn't hurt. And she was very nice. We were greatly in love. We couldn't stop touching each other. When you're 18 or 19 or 20, that's wonderful when two people can't stop touching each other. When you get into your later years, that's just damn annoying. But at that time in my life, it was wonderful. She lived in Coral Gables with her parents in a house, of course. And I had nothing to do. I was on leave from college. And I had about 8-9 months off time. And so I flew down to Coral Gables. I found a little apartment in a place called the Seville, which was in Coral Gables. It was beautiful. There was a courtyard with palm trees. It looked great. And these little apartments were basically like outside off the courtroom. The courtroom, the courtyard, courtroom. Uh-oh. Freudian slip right off the courtroom. The apartment had a little kitchenette, which was comprised of a small-sized mini refrigerator, a two-burner stove, and that was probably about it as far as I can recall. No dishwasher, no microwave, nothing like that. And there was a bed. The floor was a tile floor, no carpets. It was a tile floor. And when it was humid outside, it was double humid inside the little apartment. That's where I lived. I hated Florida for many, many reasons. The major reason, and I still recall it today, and it bothers me even more so, cockroaches, man. Cockroaches. Can you say that with me?
Cockroaches.
Tons of them. Tons of them. Immigrant cockroaches coming from all countries on the boats and shopping bags or something. And they even called them different things. There were varieties of cockroaches. It wasn't just a cockroach. There were varieties of them.
I have cockroaches.
What variety? What? There's a variety of them? The worst were the ones called palmetto bugs, I believe they were called. They were huge cockroaches. I'm not talking about the kind you step on. I'm talking about the ones that chase you. They were about the size of a small dog. All right, that's perhaps an exaggeration. A Maltese. No, that's perhaps an exaggeration as well. I would say that these cockroaches were about the size of a praying mantis, that kind of thing, a small bird. They were huge. I remember going to an Italian restaurant. Rocky Graziano had a chain of Italian restaurants. They were incredible. They were wonderful. His sauce, his pasta sauce, was unbelievable. I used to go there almost every night for dinner. I wouldn't eat all day just so I could eat there at night because I couldn't afford anything else. So I'd go in there. I remember going in there one night and coming out of the restaurant, and it's about like 10 o'clock at night, and I'm coming out of the restaurant, and in front of me, leaning on a lamppost, is a cockroach. It was actually leaning. It wasn't on the ground on its whatever legs they have. It was leaning against the lamppost, smoking a cigarette, trying to be cool. I don't think there was really a cigarette, but as I recall it, it looked like one. The cockroach was leaning up against the lamppost and basically saying to me as I walked out of the restaurant, "Hey, what do you want to do about it? You got a problem with me?" A feisty cockroach, standing on its hind legs, looking at me like, "What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it, Van Damme?" It was scary as hell. This cockroach, I actually approached it a little bit. The cockroach didn't move. It didn't even move. It felt like it could take me on.
You want a piece of me? You want a piece of my antenna, Van Damme?
It scared the hell out of me.
Here was the other problem about that. It was a bed. It was a metal frame bed in my apartment off of the courtroom, off the courtyard, on a tile floor. And the tile floor was smelly and wet, and it was an awful experience. Florida is wet. It is just plain wet. Everything in it is wet. It's horrible. It's just a horrible place. It rains every day in Florida at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Every single, it's like you don't need a watch. Well, look, it's raining. Must be 4 o'clock. It was incredible. It would rain for about maybe half an hour, like a rain shower. And then from that point on, it would be as humid as hell. Just humid. If you had one hair on your chin, it would frizz. It was horrible. It was the most humid place I had ever been in my life to date. Florida. Awful. Awful. Anyway, I went to bed one night on my metal frame bed on my tile floor. Woke up in the morning, and there were five or six cockroaches just walking around the floor. Like, but it's the morning. Let's just walk around Ron's floor. And then there was something like, it looked like a scorpion or something. It looked like a little lobster. It looked like a little lobster walking around the floor. I said, I'm out of here. I am out of here. And that wasn't the only bug incident that I had. There was a lovely park in Coral Gables, a lovely park. It was a good sized park, beautiful grass, palm trees, the whole bit. And I was with my girl, the person that I went down there to be with, the person that touches me all the time, and I touch her back. It was wonderful. And we're lying in the grass. We're lying in the grass on our backs, looking up at the puffy clouds in the sky, waiting for it to be 4 o'clock to be rained on. And all of a sudden, I feel this little tickle on the back of my head. And I'm saying, you stop that. I'm ticklish. Stop it. And she says, I'm not tickling you. I turn my head to the side. On the side of my head, with its little tail, is a lizard, an iguana, a dinosaur. I don't know what the hell this thing was. It was a lizard. What? What are you talking about? You can't lie on the grass in a park without being attacked by a lizard? Now, I'm not saying the lizard was attacking me. Its tail was swishing my forehead. That's disgusting. I don't need that. I don't need that at all. I respect animals. I love animals. I love cats. I love dogs. I love pigs. I love chickens. I love everything. I love all living things. I will not kill them. I will eat them on occasion, but I will not kill them. I will not harm them. I love animals. However, cockroaches and a lizard touching your face, I draw the line. I draw the line. I don't want them hurt. I just don't want to be there. Florida, man. Wow. Awful place. I was there in the summer, and you would walk down the street. It would be like 150 degrees outside. You'd be sweating like a pig. You could take a bath in deodorant and still sweat profusely. It was a horrible, horrible situation. And then you would walk into a pharmacy or into a building or a store, and it would be 20 degrees inside with the air conditioning pumping like there's no tomorrow. So your body is going from sweating, horrible, I'm going to faint, it's so hot, and split second later, you're in a freezer like a meat locker with meat hanging from the ceiling. How do people actually live there? How do you put up with that temperature change? Your body must say, get me out of here. It's incredible. Not only that, but everything in Florida is made of stucco. Everything's made of stucco. Stucco, 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 cement, stucco. Everything. And everything's painted white or pink. All the buildings are white or pink. And you get the bright sunlight, It's 110 degrees outside. You're walking down the street, and all that stuff is reflecting off of the pink and white buildings. It's a nightmare. It's a visual nightmare. It's a temperature nightmare. And here's what I don't understand. Seniors go down there to live on purpose. I don't understand how Florida doesn't kill them. I don't understand how when you're a senior, you want to breathe clean air. It's clean, but it's as thick as hell with the humidity. I don't understand it. You go blind. Seniors already are losing their eyesight. So let's put them in a place where there's white and pink stucco that reflects into their eyes so they can't see anything. Let's really screw them up, because when they get older, they get really, really cold. So they want a warm place. So let's do that. And then if they want to go inside, let's blast them with 20-degree air conditioning. Let's screw up their body temperature really bad. Florida, man. Florida, a great place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. What a nasty place that is. And everybody you meet, you know, I met a lot of Floridians, and they're very, very nice people. They have like a little southern twang to them. But most of the people who live in Florida are from New York or Boston. Most of them, most all of them. And they call themselves snowbirds. Snowbirds. How lovely. How charming and adorable. Oh, I'm a snowbird. What are you going to do a ballet? Are you going to do the ballet, the snowbird ballet for me? How adorable. What are you? I'm a snowbird. Oh, that's really adorable. A snowbird. Whoa, how nice. Oh, that's so pleasant. Yeah. In the summer months, I live in the north. The winter months, I live in the south. Oh, so you're a nomad. You're not a snowbird. You're a freaking nomad. You have no roots. Oh, I'm actually a citizen of Florida. That's what I put on my taxes, because our taxes are much lower down here. So I stay here like for 6 months plus one day. Now I'm a Florida resident. Whatever. To me, moving to Florida is an admission that you're ready to die. And now I said, let me go to a place where we can, as a group, just die together. It's like Waco, Texas. I mean, like, remember that thing, the Waco thing with the cult? Similar, very, very similar. Let's live in a state that looks like a penis and go out in glory. Let's go to a place where I really believe that the medical facilities in Florida, I guess there are some good ones, but I think most of them have a fucking attitude. You know, like, oh, here comes a person who's 89 years old. Rehabilitate them? Sure, what the hell. It's like, you know, in other parts of the country, it's, we've got to save their life. In Florida, it's like, nah, I don't know, whatever. It's just weird to me. And the other thing that I've talked about on this show before is that people in Florida don't know how to dress. They don't know how to dress. Men especially. They wear orange-colored pants. Orange-colored pants and banana-colored pants with plaid T-shirts and plaid polo shirts. They look like cartoon characters. It's almost like they're saying, I am so old, why bother dressing properly? I'm going to die soon anyway. And the women are no better. The women are no better. They wear big puffy muumuus with floral arrangements on them. They're just, these people are not attractive. They're just not attractive. And then there's spring break, which is a break for the kids, but not a break for the people that live in Florida. All of a sudden, their little penis island is inundated by college students from all over the world, who go to Florida to get banged on the beach and to have too much alcohol, get arrested by the cops, usually in Fort Lauderdale. And there's an invasion. It's an invasion of kids that want to be unruly, that that just want to break all the rules and just be the biggest pig assholes they can be for a week. And here the senior citizens just staring at their beach going, I can't go to the beach. Look at the schmucks on the beach this week. Oh, no. I'm telling you, man, Florida just sucks the big one. Now, I know that not everybody feels the same way I do. The only thing I like about Florida is you can eat at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's the same food that it would be at 8 o'clock in the evening, only the 4 o'clock in the afternoon food is the early bird special. It's kind of almost half price. And let me tell you something. In Florida, when you're a senior, there's nothing else to do at 4 o'clock in the afternoon other than eat or watch the rain come at 4 o'clock. I don't know. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. I suppose I just don't understand it. So will I ever retire to Florida? Apparently not. Apparently not. I kind of don't want to. And don't force me either, because I don't want to.
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years? A true beer drinking experience? Or like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Fockenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Fockenhalter. It's beer.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Ron. I'm great. I hope you are.
I'm great. John Hart joins us. He's an author, actually, of 5 New York Times bestsellers, and also an Edgar Award-winning author. He wrote the Bible, as a matter of fact. John, that was a great achievement on your part.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay. We're talking about The Hush, and tell me about The Hush itself. Tell me the storyline. This is an exciting thriller.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
I appreciate it. So The Hush, the title is in reference to a term known as a hush arbor. And mm-hmm. Hush arbor is an actual historical artifact going back to slavery times.
Oh.
And in those days, slaves that wanted to worship in the Christian faith were afraid to do so openly and honestly for fear of reprisal, which is, of course, understandable. So they would go out into the woods and the swamps and worship in secret, and these places were referred to as hush arbors or brush arbors, depending on where you were. And they did that simply because there was no church to be found, no hymnals to be discovered. It was a secret way to do what they wanted to do. And so much of this new book of mine, The Hush, takes place in this very large tract of forgotten, sort of swampy area in the northern part of North Carolina County, where for about 200 years a freed slave settlement lived in near isolation and secrecy. Mm-hmm. And now the modern world is intruded and strange things are afoot in the swamp.
Ooh.
So that's where the term comes from.
Now, most of your writing is mystery writing?
Yeah, so I write mystery thrillers. Mm-hmm. They're often referred to as Southern Gothic. There's always a lot of family drama elements to it. And that's what all 5 of my previous books were. They were very grounded in the real. This book's a little different. Mm-hmm. It takes a slight detour to what I've done in the past, in that I dislike the term supernatural thriller, although it could fit. I prefer the term magical realism.
Mm-hmm.
One of the journalists I spoke with and who had read the book described it as being an elemental book, and what he meant by that was just that there are these deep ties to the land and to violence done years back that resonates even hundreds of years into the future. So this is really a thriller that does have some elements of magical realism, and that's a first for me.
Cool. Now, I understand that this one actually is out as an audio book, and that's kind of special. You have Jeremy Bob, who is a who does an incredible job. What is it like to hear your work verbalized?
Well, that is a very fair question. And I will say this is the sixth of my books to be made into an audiobook, mm-hmm. which I just think is fabulous. And Jeremy Bob does a remarkable job. This is the first one of mine he's ever narrated, mm-hmm. And I've listened to it, and I just think it's outstanding. As you can imagine, the narrator makes such a big difference in the sure. pleasant quality of the experience. But it's a bit of a shock the first time you hear a book, your book read by someone else, because they might not see things exactly the way you do, and that can be translated into the intonations and the emphasis on how the book is read. If it's done by a professional like Jeremy, I'm always pleased. But it is a bit of a wonderful moment to see such talented people committing themselves to something that I have created. Mm-hmm. But it is jarring at times when you see that they might have interpreted a scene a little bit differently than I saw it in my mind.
Interesting. It's almost like a screenplay. Of course, you know, on a movie screen, they change the entire story often. But it's the coming to life faction that must be kind of interesting to an author, as you've just said.
Well, you're right, because you know, they don't just read it. I mean, they really do in many ways act it. You know, different voices for different characters. Yeah. They're very skilled at this.
Yeah, it's interesting because books were originally supposed to be a one-on-one experience where you hear it in your head, but it's just you. It's nothing's more personal than a soul mind reading a soul book, and now. With this audiobooks, it just defines it a little bit more. But so is, you know, that's the generation that's coming up. I mean, reading, I mean, I'm sure you have a romance with reading. I sit down and I read the newspaper every day. I think I'm the only one in the country that still does that, and they charge me accordingly. But I mean, that man, I'm missing the romance of this stuff. But it is interesting, you know. Technology brings it to another level.
Well, I have some pretty strong thoughts on this, you know, and they're neutral. I'm not saying this is good or bad, but I've always said that the relationship between writer and reader is the last great form of intimate communication between total strangers, for the reasons that you just described. Yeah. I mean, we can all read the same book and we experience it differently. We bring our own selves into it in a way that you might not otherwise do. And with a narrator, you do lose some of that. But, you know, there are so many people now that are so busy and so rushed for time. And I listen to audiobooks in the car.
That's what
whenever I'm traveling. I'm on the road for the next 5 weeks touring the book. So I think it does fill a void for those who are crazy pressed for time, for those who are vision impaired. And some people just prefer it. But it is a little different.
It's very, very different. Yeah, it is. Well, the book's incredible. It's called The Hush, and not only is it in print form, but you can also hear it. So that's also available everywhere, I assume, John.
It is, yeah. It's one of the wonders of the modern publishing world when run from a major house in New York. You know, they really are skilled at getting the books out there, and I think that's obviously very important.
Very quickly, are you working on another one?
Always working on another one, Jeremy. I mean, Ron, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll change it.
Yeah, absolutely. The new one is... I'm sorry?
No, go on.
Yeah, the new one is a little different. It's set in the twilight of the Vietnam War in Charlotte, North Carolina, 1974. And I've never written anything set exclusively in the past before. Although I will say with The Hush, there are elements that take place in the 1850s, and then again in the Great Depression, and then mostly in the modern times. So I'm starting to have a little fun with this kind of time travel writing. But
interesting. Yeah, I'm starting, I mean, I don't know you well, but I'm starting to see that you get into things, and then when you get into something, it's a different facet of it. Like, you didn't call it supernatural, but, you know, and then now we're getting into a little time travel. We're getting, you know, I can see it's getting funky.
Well, let me tell you how it works for me. I mean, I believe this very firmly. I think any writer that is working from a place of comfort is not working hard enough. Mm-hmm. I think safe writing makes for boring fiction.
Yep.
It's important to push. And every time I start a new book, I set myself a specific challenge to see if I can do it. And with The Hush, the challenge was to take the kind of character-driven Southern Gothic murder mystery that I've been doing for a while now, add this new element of magical realism and make it fit, you know, logically by the end of the book. That, you know, and this is the way it works. If you break the rules of the physical world in writing these kinds of books, that is fine as long as the rules of good storytelling are not broken, meaning the connective tissue between the characters and the logic of their actions and the resolution. If those things adhere to the kind of logic that a reader can follow and appreciate, then it doesn't matter if you play the loose with the rest of the rules.
It's interesting. It's called flying with your feet on the ground. Or vice versa.
I like that.
Yeah. Is there a website where we can follow you?
Yeah, absolutely, Ron. My author website is johnhartfiction.com. I generally keep that fairly updated. I'm also most easily tracked on Facebook. John Hart Author is my author page on Facebook, and I keep that updated pretty regularly as well.
There you go. There you have it. The author, John Hart, and the book, The Hush, also on audio now. Hey, pleasure speaking to you.
Ron, thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
You take care. Bye-bye.
All right, you too.
Okay. Interesting man. An interesting man. If you're a writer or you write stuff or you blog stuff, you would find that quite interesting, what goes on in the mind of a professional writer, which is really nice. Well, I'm not going to Florida anytime soon. I do have friends in Florida. I know people in Florida. I'm aware of them. And they're great people. They have a love of the ocean and of water. They like going on boats, and they find that very relaxing and compelling, which is very nice. I'm not a water person. I drink about 4 or 5 glasses of water a day, and I pee excessively. But I don't think my love of water has anything to do with their love of water. I'm not a water guy. When I see the large ocean, I say to myself, oh, crap, I could drown with this thing. I try to stay away from it. When I go to the beach, I just sizzle. I don't tan. I sizzle. It's bad for my skin. My dermatologist says, don't you dare, Ron. Don't go near the sun. Even at night, don't go near the sun. You know, my dermatologist, I have a dermatologist, by the way. Now you know I have a problem with skin. I mean, my skin is fine, but I'm very white. I'm very Caucasian. That's about all. That's about all I can tell you. So she says I have to put truckloads of sunscreen on when I go outside at all, even if it's a dark, gloomy day. And that's always a pleasant thing to hear from a dermatologist. So I'm not a sun guy. I'm not a water guy. I'm a stay in your room and shut up kind of guy. That's me. But Floridians, they're lovely people. They're lovely people. It just, that kind of lifestyle just isn't for me. When people say, Ron, you want to go out and get some exercise, play a round of golf? I respond by saying, No, I don't. No. How many holes in a round of golf? 18, Ron. Is there a golf course with just like 2? Can I go to that one? And even then, I don't have any banana-colored pants. I wish you peace. Big finish, here we go.